urban wildlife this season. We're talking today with David Drake, Extension and Wildlife Specialist, University of Wisconsin-Madison, Department of Forest and Wildlife in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, and I'm Adam Wigger. David, for those of us who are not familiar with the phrase, what is urban wildlife?
Urban wildlife is a broad term to describe those species of animals that are living in a human-dominated landscape, so kind of sharing that same landscape that humans share. And urban depends on how you want to define it, but we typically think about urban from a standpoint of human density and the way the U.S. Census Bureau defines urban. Well, the U.S. Census Bureau essentially divides the country into two classifications, rural or urban, and that's it. So urban, density-based definition, and it typically is clusters of 2,500 or more people in a certain area, or 50,000 or more people in a defined area. So when we think about urban, we typically think about cities, Chicago, New York City, LA, Houston, Minneapolis, whatever. Then we get into suburban, and suburban is also in that urban framework. So it's an area that where the land has been modified to suit our human needs. And you have kind of increased densities of human beings, just not as many humans as in that urban core. There is not necessarily a population-based definition for suburban. So what I kind of talk about from an urban-suburban standpoint is I generally say urban just to encompass urban and suburban. But generally, with urban, you do have that population-based definition, that density-based definition. With suburban, you don't. So when I talk about suburban, it's typically you think about what it looks like. It's hard to define, but you definitely know it when you see it. And so when we think about urban, we think about both urban and suburban, and it's the variety of wildlife that are sharing that same landscape as humans are.
So what are some common examples of wildlife that we see in this urban setting?
Yeah, so typically, well, there's a bunch of different ways that we can classify or categorize wildlife. So we can think of them as mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians. We can think of them as game species, or those species that are either hunted or trapped, and non-game species, those species that are not harvested. We can think about endangered species, non-endangered species, whatever the case might be. When we think about urban wildlife and describe urban wildlife, we think about them in generally three categories. So urban avoiders, urban adapters, and urban exploiters. So urban avoiders are typically those animals that either that there's not a sufficient quality or quantity of habitat to support them, and or species that are not necessarily welcome into that urban landscape. So animals like grassland birds, typically you don't see a lot of them in urbanized areas because there's just not sufficient amounts of grassland or prairie to support those birds. Other animals that are urban avoiders would be species that aren't necessarily welcome into that urban landscape, and that tends to be large predators like black bears or mountain lions or other things that we don't tend to like rattlesnakes, for example, things like that. So those would be urban avoiders. Urban exploiters are all those species that people tend to kind of curse because they have done such a good job of adapting to that modified landscape. And so that would be white-tailed deer, Canada geese, raccoons, skunks, crows, vultures, things like that. And then we get into urban exploiters, and those are typically animals that are not native. They may not be native to the United States. So European starlings, English or also called house sparrows, Norway rats, house mice, things like that. But they're also species that kind of are commensal, so they are somewhat reliant on human beings. And where you don't have human settlement, you don't find those types of species typically. But those are animals that really exploit that urban type area and do very quite well there. So those are that's kind of the spectrum of animals that we think about. But there are species that if we give them a little bit of help, and that's kind of what I try to focus on and a lot of what I do with my research and with my extension programs, is if we build some habitat for them, that we may actually be able to provide enough habitat that we can support species that typically would not be in that urbanized type area if that habitat wasn't available. And so some species like that might be some of the reptile or amphibian species. So some of the frog species or some of the salamander species we have here in Wisconsin, or some of the snakes. And again, I know people aren't terribly fond of snakes, but they are a really beneficial animal to have around. Some bird species that if we can provide enough suitable habitat that we might be able to get those types of species back. So when we think about urban wildlife, a lot of people think about urban wildlife, and I think they equate it with overabundant wildlife or wildlife damage, so damage that's caused by overabundant species like deer and raccoons and skunks and, you know, Canada geese and things like that. But I would like to see if we can't move the conversation away from more of a negative perspective and more of a positive perspective. And so try to start attracting species that normally wouldn't be there and balance out that wildlife component so it's not just overabundant species, but we have a more balanced picture of species of wildlife between species that are urban adapters and species that might be urban avoiders, but actually we can actually provide habitat for them so that they can live in these urbanized type landscapes.
You started to elaborate on it, but what is it exactly that you and your department do with urban wildlife or to benefit them?
So our department, in our Department of Forest Wildlife Ecology, we have, you know, just a wide range of faculty, both on the forestry side and the wildlife side. And I think the one commonality amongst all of us is we are probably all working in some system that has been influenced in some way or capacity by human beings. Some of us focus a little bit more on those human-dominated systems. Others focus on systems that are more natural or more wild. So I guess I might be the one who's most focused on urban wildlife. There are colleagues who are doing things in that urban system, looking at different components or different aspects of the way that animals are being influenced by or are using those modified type systems. But I spend most of what I do for my research and extension program is focused on just strictly on urban wildlife.
Kind of going back to that and urban adapters, would you say or would you think that there is more of a trend of animals becoming more adaptatious to our urban settings, especially now that we're expanding our cities, like life is becoming much more urban in the United States?
Yeah, so a lot of the species that are, especially those species that are overabundant, so those urban adapters, they're what we call habitat generalists or edge-loving type species. So they're species that are not niche specialists. So they can range across a wide variety of habitat types, land cover, and land use types. They typically have a wide range of diets. So a lot of them are omnivorous, or they can utilize a wide variety of food. And because of that, they're extremely adaptable. And so they also are what we call edge species. And edge is where two or more habitat types come together. And so when you fragment a landscape, typically you create a lot of edge, either directly or indirectly. And so we have created ideal habitat for a lot of these urban adapters because as we fragment the landscape to build and benefit us as human beings for our residential needs or commercial needs or work needs or whatever the case might be, that we are creating a tremendous amount of edge by all the fragmentation we're doing in the landscape. And these animals that are urban adapters just benefit tremendously from that, the creation and abundance of that edge. And so a lot of times people say, you know, as the cities are moving out to where the animals are, as the cities expand, they're kind of engulfing the animals. And there is some truth to that, but there are a lot of animals that are also moving into the city, partly because there may not be competition there. If you're a territorial animal like a coyote, there may not be as many coyotes in the city as there are in the country to start with. Eventually, typically, you get more animals of a species in the city than you would typically have of that same species in the country because there's more resources in the city to support those animals. But when an animal or a species starts to colonize or move into an urban area, one of the reasons they do that is because there's less competition than outside the city. So we have animals that are definitely moving into the city because they are comfortable here, there's suitable habitat for them, abundant food, you know, shelter needs and things like that.
Kind of speaking on that, or on those animals that are either moving in or we're moving out towards them, are there any that we need to be aware of, either that we need to take extra precautions to be safe from or that we need to actively try and better their habitat?
So most cities in North America, there's probably not many cities that don't have coyotes in them. And a lot of people are nervous about coyotes generally because they are a predator. And coyotes certainly, they do kill pet dogs. And if you go out to Southern California, for example, they will occasionally attack humans and things like that. The best thing we can do for wildlife is make sure that they fear us. And as long as they fear us, especially predator animals like coyotes or red fox or bobcats, or, you know, we do have mountain lions that are living in Phoenix and Los Angeles and things like that. As long as animals fear us, then when they see us, they will typically move away from us rather than be bold and move toward us. So that's one of the best things we can do for species like that. For overabundant species, the best thing we can do, or one of the best things we can do, and this is somewhat controversial amongst urban residents, but one of the reasons we have overabundant species is because we have no cost-effective way to regulate their population growth. And so the easiest thing to do, or the most cost-effective thing to do, I should say, is to harvest those animals. So either hunt them or trap them so we can actually regulate their growth and not allow them to get so abundant that they become problematic for a lot of people. So that's one another issue that is an ongoing issue in urban settings. And then as we've already talked a little bit about, there are certainly animals that don't spend any time at all in urban areas because the habitat just is not present either in the abundance of quantity or it's not quality habitat. And so the more we can do to actually build suitable habitat to benefit wildlife, that's another way that we can actually keep wildlife and humans separated or have some kind of a buffer because we've got suitable habitat that they're happy to stay in, and then they're not going to navigate across areas where there are a lot of humans typically. So you can hopefully maybe moderate some of those human-wildlife interactions a little bit. Obviously, as wildlife are moving across that urbanized landscape, there's plenty of perils for them as well. So they have to cross a lot of roads, and so there's certainly mortality issues from getting hit by cars and things of that nature as well. So there's a lot we can do, and I think a lot more than we are currently doing in many cities across North America.
Yeah, so what are some of those things that we could be doing? Like, I've seen articles on the internet about wildlife bridges over highways or other kind of infrastructure like that. What would you say?
Yeah, so the wildlife bridges, some of the more famous ones, if you will, are across the Trans-Canadian Highway. And that is really out in areas where you're in kind of more non-urban areas. So they're more of a wild type area. You know, in the city, there's a few things we can do. One of the most stable landforms in the city are residential yards. You don't see that getting torn down and razed very often. And so whatever people can do to actually plant native landscape in their yard to benefit wildlife, from pollinator habitat to food resources, you know, from a natural, where you're planting natural food sources that are providing food in all four seasons. If you're up here in the temperate regions like we are in Wisconsin, that would be beneficial. Making sure there's available water, water sources and things like that. And make sure the habitat's connected so that we don't just have habitat in one yard. And then, you know, that one yard is surrounded by inhospitable habitat in all their yards that are not providing habitat. So the more habitat we can actually provide in that urban area, the better, for sure. And make sure it's connected habitat would be very, very beneficial. If you don't want to plant things, there's a lot of anthropogenic sources of habitat. So you can put out bird baths, you can put out bird feeders, bird houses, bat houses, things like that. And then I think the other thing that we can do that is probably as big of a deal as actually providing habitat is just educating people about what type of wildlife are in the city, what's normal behavior, what's not normal behavior for the wildlife, what people can do to actually benefit the wildlife, and trying to improve people or increase people's knowledge and tolerance for those animals that are in the cities so that the humans are happy to share that landscape with the wildlife. And we can make those interactions between humans and wildlife, when they occur, we can make them as positive as possible because the humans are not ever leaving the city. And the wildlife, once the wildlife are here, it's rare that the wildlife are leaving the city. So we better figure out how we can live together.
Perfect segue into my next question. What kind of resources are available to educate on that, or are there any specific ones that you'd recommend?
Yeah, so there are resources out there, and I'm going to put a shameless plug in for a couple of them. We have a website that we've developed called urbanwildlifeproject.wisc.edu. So on that website, it's a pretty comprehensive website to explain what urban landscape looks like, the types of wildlife that you would expect to see in those type of urban landscapes, similar to what we've talked a little bit about already. Different ways to help wildlife in terms of habitat management practices, things of that nature. And so that's a really good website to look at. There are some other things out there through National Wildlife Federation. They have a certified backyard wildlife program. Cornell University, through their Lab of Ornithology, they have YardWorks, which is a mapping tool and a resource that you can use to actually figure out how to plant habitat in your yard. American Bird Conservancy has some really good resources about native plants that you might want to plant. So there are some resources out there, and I think if you Google urban wildlife, that probably would be the best way to find some of those resources, unless you have specific websites that you would go to. So those are good resources. Sometimes it depends on the state, but some state wildlife agencies have resources from a wildlife, urban wildlife standpoint. Nature centers in local cities are typically pretty good places as well.
Is there anything else you'd like to discuss today? Any information you want to put out there?
I would just encourage people to plant native wildlife as much as you possibly can, both in your individual yard. If there's common areas in your neighborhood or city parks, that would be great. And if you can make that habitat as connected as possible, that would be wonderful. And then, educate yourself about what types of wildlife are around you, what is normal and what is not normal behavior for those wildlife, and just do all you can to increase your tolerance for the wildlife that are there and do all you can to help the wildlife that are there as well.
Yeah, awesome. Biodiversity is in.
It is.
Thank you, David. We've been visiting today with Extension Wildlife Specialist, University of Wisconsin-Madison, Department of Forest and Wildlife, and the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, and I'm Adam Wigger.